Previously on Curvature Chronicles, Sarah has finally confronted the truth. The artifact isn't Zarathian, isn't understood, and definitely isn't under anyone's control. It chooses its hosts, and it remembers them. High Command has been hiding the real stakes, the real history, and the real danger. And Castor Ames is now at the center of a test older than any empire. The Kren has the book. Castor still feels it pulling at him. And Sarah is racing toward a choice she may not be ready to make. This is Episode 8, Echoes of the Chosen, where secrets stop being secrets and start becoming consequences.
Sarah keyed in the sequence before lining her arm up in the correct spot. She could see city lights flickering blow through the window in the Four Corners bar attic. Up here, though, only the wind whispering secrets. She activated the curved portal, sealed in a vault of aged stone. This was hidden above the noise of people's daily lives. The portal glowed briefly as it connected to the Zarathian command channel. Air bent inward with a ripple of energy. Her image split and stretched across light years before stabilizing in the translucent hexagonal relay chamber on board Oryx Station. Grandma Therai appeared first, arms crossed. Then Director Sorin, his body in the same position as the Admiral's. One by one, the others in the room followed suit, filling the room with silence and cold protocol.
Saranin, this is an unscheduled and unrequested contact,
Admiral Therai said flatly.
I wouldn't breach protocol, Admiral, for routine reports. The artifact was stolen again. The Kren has it. And on top of that, Castor's syncing with the artifact is happening entirely too fast to be natural. It's progressed further than I thought possible. I want some answers as to what I'm dealing with.
We've detected that shift also. The artifact's signal is erratic, defensive. That isn't uncommon when a manufactured portal is resisting a former host, no matter how brief that host was.
I don't think it's just resisting, it's fighting back, it's choosing.
Admiral Therai lifted her chin slightly, but no one spoke.
You've been keeping something from me.
You were told what you needed to know when you varied from your primary mission.
Sarah leaned as far forward in her chair as she could. She lowered her head, and her voice took on a low edge.
Castor Ames asked me why the artifact chose Earth, why it sought out a human, if it was Zarathian technology. I didn't have an answer to those questions, because I've never been given any. Most of you here remember what happened the last time I was left to freelance things. It's why I'm on Earth now.
A flicker of discomfort passed between two of the observers. Finally, Loren Hua's deep voice broke the silence.
Because this artifact isn't a portal or Zarathian technology, it's a test, and people have passed it before.
What did I just hear? It's not from Zora?
Therai finally looked at her.
The book is one of three artifacts found in the wreckage of a ship that is believed to be from what on Earth is known in some circles as the Caldwell 51. The artifact can infuse helix crystals and bind them to triple helix DNA. The crash site was found on a dead moon. Experts think it happened during the earliest part of the Meridian Secession conflict. It was found sometime shortly before the Ark ships had begun their missions. We don't really know who created it, or understand it very well.
Then why are we using it?
Sorin interjected.
Because it reveals some of the inner things in the different species it interacts with. It doesn't just move through space, or even time. It moves through minds, cultures. It chooses. When it finds something compatible, it grows more powerful. Even dangerous.
Sarah's voice dropped yet another octave.
Soda, to try and figure the artifact out, you let it bond with a Kren agent.
Yes, Saranine. We did. We wanted to see what would happen. To see what the potential Kren weaknesses were. What they might become with it. It was a controlled operation.
Therai admitted. Sarah's fists clenched.
Controlled until it wasn't. Controlled until it fled. to Earth.
There was a long pause before Lurin spoke again. He cleared his throat.
The artifact has memory. It remembers the ones who survived it, the ones who channel it, and every time it returns to them.
Humans, you mean? It returns to humans?
No, Saranine. But it hasn't always been in the hands of Zorathians, but those chosen for their adaptability to chaos, their emotional volatility. The artifact feeds off this. It tests it. Even creates it.
And what if...
Sarah's voice sounded brittle.
Castor Ames fails this test. I asked you once if I was supposed to kill him. But now I see. I was just the backup plan, wasn't I?
No one answered. Terai looked away.
Well?
Yes, Saranine.
Triel Vaughn blurted out. Sarah's pulse thundered in her ears as she leaned away from the portal.
Then you aren't studying him. You're sacrificing him.
Sarah lifted her arm to break contact between her sigil and the portal. Before it closed, she heard Sorin say one last thing.
You wanted to know why the artifact showed up on Earth. Now you know. It came to finish what it's already started.
The campus was almost empty this late at night, save for the streetlight hum and the faraway shuffle of someone's shoes. And Castor Ames. He walked without direction, hands in his jacket pockets, his thoughts louder than the wind rustling through the oaks lining the science quad. The Kren had taken the book. A thread, a whisper, he could feel it. Like a scent he couldn't quite place, or a dream you remembered sideways. He didn't know if it was proximity or the residue of bonding, but it was there, brushing the edge of his thoughts like unseen wings fluttering. It wasn't gone. That's what scared him. Even though it was stolen, even though he wasn't holding it, it hadn't let him go. He stopped near the anthropology building, staring up at the dim, unlit windows. This place used to feel like a haven to him, a vault full of the knowledge of the world. Now it just looked like a cage made of books. Books meant to keep your thinking small and in line. Books now with answers that were far too small for the questions in his head. Castor sat on the steps and leaned back, closing his eyes. A bolt of thought struck him. What had happened to the others? He'd seen them in the visions, or memories, or hallucinations, or whatever the heck they were. The Norse shaman with her silver eyes. The robed Egyptian priest with sun marks glowing on his palms. The Mayan twin brothers, who walked out of darkness and looked like stone themselves. Castor just knew these people were real. They had existed. What had happened to them after the book left? He tried to recall the details. In each case, something had broken. Something had shifted. Some had vanished. Some had died. One, the Norse figure, had seemed to accept it, like the weight of the book was a crown she wore gladly, until it became too heavy. And they'd all been changed. None of them stayed who they were. He rubbed his shaking hands together. Is that happening to me? When he thought of the book now, he didn't think of paper or ink. He thought of momentum, of being nudged forward through events he didn't start and couldn't stop. It had called him a leader, offered him a throne. But what kind of leader did it want? And worse, what if it didn't want anything? What if it was just watching, the way predators watch from the tall grass, not out of hate, but hunger? A sudden gust of wind tugged at his coat. His pulse quickened. He felt it again. The book. Closer now. Just a flicker. Not physical, but unmistakable. a spike of static behind the eyes, a memory that wasn't his. The Kren must have opened it again. Caster stood, breathing hard. He wasn't done with it, and it sure as hell wasn't done with him. Sara sat alone at the far back of the university library's archives, her coat folded beside her, a faint shimmer of dried blood still staining it where the Kren had caught her. She hadn't told Caster she was here. She needed to be alone for this. The holo display glowed softly as she flicked through layers of encrypted cultural cross-referencing. Her training was to ignore Earth myths. They were often distorted echoes of real Zarathian tech. But now, those echoes seemed louder, more deliberate. She followed the pattern. Three human civilizations, three hosts, three world-shifting events after contact with the artifact. But something wasn't sitting right. Not anymore. She accessed an old mission log, one she wasn't supposed to see. An older Zarathian operative, codenamed Karev, embedded in Egypt during the 18th dynasty. Another name redacted, believed to be behind the Bifrost incursion in Scandinavia. And then two, Varahel and Nabohel, traced to the Yucatan Peninsula. All were Zarathians, not humans. They had assumed human form, deep cover agents like herself, sent to interface with the book and guide its presence during testing cycles. But the record stopped there. Sara narrowed her eyes. Something was missing. Not a redaction, a removal, a hole in the timeline, a shadow covering up where an explanation should have been. She leaned back in the chair, heart pounding.
This isn't the first time the book went off script.
Because the pattern wasn't about the book bonding with humans. It was about its choosing away from Zarathians. And now it had chosen again. Only this time, the host wasn't one of theirs. She stood quickly, shutting down the terminal, shoving the chair back with a loud enough to echo across the room. A startled librarian glanced over. Sara ignored her. She didn't know what it meant yet, but it was big enough, dangerous enough, that even High Command had buried it. And she was almost certain now. They not only didn't fully control the book anymore, they hardly controlled it all. Whatever Caster had become, or was becoming, it wasn't just another experiment. It was something new, something they hadn't predicted. And if the Kren still had the book... She was already running by the time the thought finished. Out the door, across the quad, through the open night, heading for Caster's apartment. Because whatever the book had awakened inside him, it was changing the stakes. And it was changing her. The book lay open on the floor of the antique store, untouched but alive, vibrating with a soft, malicious energy that twisted the surrounding air. The Kren stood over it, jaw clenched, breathing in long, slow pulls. His armor beneath the stolen coat hissed faintly as the ambient cold crept into his blood. He'd lit no lamps. He didn't need to see the pages. He could feel them. The book was speaking again, but not in words. It was showing his failure, his failures. The raid on Kallis Vaan, the moment he had broken the containment field and yanked the artifact from its crystal socket, his voice full of triumph, unaware that in that instant he had set something older than his species free. He had bonded with the artifact by force, and at first it obeyed. But the obedience was shallow, mechanical. Now the deeper layers were surfacing, and they hated him. The book's pages flipped on their own, hurling image after image into his skull. Civilizations collapsing into fire, stars twisting into black mouths, leaders falling to their knees in surrender. All of them carried the mark. All of them had once touched it.
"You are mine. I opened your core, bore your weight. I bled for you."
The book pulsed.
"You broke what not understood. You summoned and could not contain. You, vessel without shape, a storm with no purpose."
The Kren roared and slammed his boot down on the book's spine, but it didn't crumple. The moment his foot touched it, the pain returned, a high-pitched screech in his nervous system, like molten glass pouring into his veins. He stumbled back, coughing. The book remained open, calm, unmoved.
"Return me to the path, or be broken."
He tore the coat from his shoulders and hurled it at the wall. The knife was still on the counter nearby, the human weapon. Useless here, but not all of Earth was useless. He was beginning to understand. If the book still responded to him, it meant the bond wasn't severed, just unstable. Like an echo searching for the original sound. The question was, why? And the answer was simple. The book had another bond. Caster Ames. And that meant he still had a chance. He would find the human, the boy, and next time he wouldn't take the book. He'd take him. Willing or not.
Sara pushed open the door to Caster's apartment, the lock already disengaged. No signs of forced entry, no sign of struggle. But the tension in the air hit her immediately, the same prickling pressure she always felt near activated portal energy. He had been here, and not long ago.
"Caster?"
she called, though she knew he wouldn't answer. The place was dark, except for the streetlight leaking through the blinds. A half-finished mug of tea sat on the coffee table. A textbook was open on the arm of the couch. Symbolic Systems in Pre-Linguistic Cultures. The same kind of title Caster always mocked in class, but now devoured like gospel. Sara moved slowly through the space, scanning. His messenger bag was gone. So were his heavier boots, the ones he wore when he didn't know how long he'd be out. He wasn't grabbed. He left on his own. She moved to the desk in the corner. Paper notes were strewn across the surface. Archaeological references, translations of Mayan glyphs, Nordic bind runes, Egyptian solar cartouches. Caster had been making connections, and he was getting close to something. Then she saw it, a small, square note half-tucked under a page on ancient priest-king rituals. The handwriting was rushed, but unmistakably his. Retracing steps, need to feel the book again, yesterday's tomorrows, starting where it started. See. Sara stared at the words for a long moment, her jaw tightening. The antique store. Of course. That strange little place near the edge of the old district, where the book had first come into his life, where it had arrived on Earth. She folded the note, pocketed it, and moved quickly to the door. If she was right, and the Kren still had the book, then Caster had just walked straight into the lion's den. Caster approached the antique store slowly, drawn to it, like a tethered object being reeled in. It looked the same as it had that first day, faded green awning, dark windows streaked with age and weather, the same crooked brass sign over the door, yesterday's tomorrow's. But something was wrong. The air hummed, faintly, like the world was holding its breath, or worse, like it had just exhaled. Caster paused at the threshold. The door was slightly ajar, its old bell silent, as if it knew this wasn't the kind of visit that welcomed jingling entrances. He stepped inside. The place was dark, only moonlight spilling across the scuffed floorboards. Dust drifted lazily through the air, unsettled from somewhere recently disturbed. Shelves of forgotten things loomed all around him. Clocks with no hands, mirrors that reflected strange angles, broken figurines with human eyes. He didn't call out. He felt it. The book was here. Close. Weak. But aware. A smear of scorched floor near the back confirmed it. The familiar afterglow of a portal opening and closing. The energy ripple was still dissipating, curling along the walls like static-laced fog. The book had been used hard and recently, and that meant the Kren was either gone or recovering nearby. Caster's eyes swept the room. Then he heard it. No footsteps, not breathing, just a single short sound. A hiss, like someone breathing through clenched teeth. He turned toward the sound and saw a hunched silhouette behind the main counter, motionless, chest rising and falling in jagged bursts. One gray-skinned hand rested on the wooden surface, twitching. The Kren. He looked different, slower, almost drained. The veins under his skin pulsed with erratic light, like a power conduit that had burned too hot and too fast. The book sat just a foot away from him on the counter, closed, steaming faintly, its edges cracked from the strain. Frashek raised his head, and Caster saw it in his face. Pain. But behind that, rage.
You again. You don't know what you're holding.
The Kren rasped, voice lower than before. Almost thinner.
I know it's not yours.
Caster said, steadying his voice, eyes on the book. The Kren laughed, dry and bitter.
That's the lie it told you too.
Caster took a cautious step forward.
You used it. All you energy burned through it. You're running on fumes.
I still have enough to break you.
He surged forward, but stumbled, catching himself on the edge of the counter. His body shook with the effort. The book glowed faintly at the motion, not in solidarity, but in disgust. It rejected him now. Caster could feel it. The book was done with the Kren, but not with me. Another few feet, if he could grab it. Outside, unseen, Sarah approached, the note still clenched in her hand. Just as something inside the store flared like a lightning strike, held in a closed fist.
The book is slipping deeper into hostile hands, and Sarah just learned her entire mission may have been built on a lie. The artifact isn't just choosing. It's circling back to something it started long before either of them were born. As the Kren pushes the book past its limits, and Caster feels the echo of every host before him, the question hanging over all of this is simple and brutal. Is this destiny or a setup? In the next episode, Sarah and Caster will collide with the truth about the Caldwell 51 artifacts, and the first real fracture will appear in their trust. If you're enjoying the series, tap follow or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps more listeners find the story. Until next time, keep your eyes on the curve.